Yo, what up? It's me. It's your boy K Fitz, and I am so excited to be back in the building with you once again today. Today we're doing a very special live stream. I have the awesome, the phenomenal, the stellar Miss Rashida Jackson. She is on the line today just to be here with you to talk about a couple of different things. Today in particular, we're really going to focus on her book. Notice I said that with a large K. We're going to focus on her book, Pillars to Commandments, My Journey to Conversion. If you have not gotten this book already, it is on Amazon. Again, it is Rashida Jackson. The book is called From Pillars to Commandments, My Journey to Conversion. So before we go any further, I promise you, we will put in the description the link to the book. So when this is done, real quick instructions. Step one, like this. Step two, share this. Step three, go get this book, buy it, read it, follow her, like this. Why? I just said that twice. You get my point. This is going to be worth your time, I promise you. So real quick, a little bit of background on Rashida. I'm turning this way. I got two screens going, and I want to make sure that we're putting respect on her name before we get started. So first things first. So growing up as a child, Rashida Jackson was always exposed to books, magazines, and writing by her mother. Her mother used to read to her all the time and always took her to the library to get books, as well as invested in her own personal book collection. Her mother was always involved in a writing club that she always took Rashida to with her. When she entered high school, Rashida's ninth grade English teacher sparked her interest for writing when she returned a graded assignment and told her that she was a great writer and have the potential to be a professional writer. I'm gonna pause right there. Shout out to that teacher, because the teacher was right. Anyway, as an adult, Rashida lost her passion for writing, but the interest returned once she asked people on Facebook if they would read a story about her conversion from Islam to Christianity, and the response was phenomenal. So let's talk a little bit about the book itself. So again, the book is From Pillars to Commandments, the whole thing. Pillars to Commandments, My Journey to Conversion. So in this book, it's going to disclose the personal trials and tribulations of Rashida and what she experienced while trying to find her spirituality and, most importantly, finding a true relationship with God. This book also focused on her perspective of growing up as a Muslim and converting to Christianity. She devotes part of her book to discussing the abusive and toxic relationships that made an imprint on her life, but also turned her towards God. I'm telling y'all right now, if what I said so far is not one, ensure you put respect on her name, two, ensure you don't want to go and buy it, then I should read it again. So from the top, I'm joking, we're not doing it. But look, with that being said, if you over here in the comment box, there should be a clapping emoji somewhere. If you got buttons, you can write the word clap. I need y'all to give it up real quick. We got Miss Rashida Jackson on the line. What's going on, Rashida? How you doing?
Hey, good. Happy New Year to you and everyone watching.
Absolutely. Likewise. Thank you so much for being on with us today. So before we really get into some deep questions from the book, we already gave your bio, phenomenal background. You've done a lot of great things. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and some of that stuff.
Okay. So I'm actually completing my master's in clinical mental health. Eventually at the end of May, I'll be somebody's therapist. Black therapists matter, go me. I am a member of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated. I currently work at an HBCU college to get our young black people into school to help further them educational wise. I'm just an outgoing person and just love and want to help the people. That's all I'm about. Peace, happiness, all that good stuff.
Y'all hear that? Peace, love, and happiness. Peace, love, and happiness. None of this ratchetry that's going on in the world right now. But, hey, real talk, it is an honor to have you on today. We are all super excited to hear your feedback about your book. So with that being said, I don't want to waste any more time. Let's get into some of the questions we have about your book.
Okay.
All right. So my first question I want to ask you. So if you already have the book and you've already read it, You'll know some of the things we're going to talk about. But if you haven't, come back and watch this stream again. But anyway, the first question I got for you. In chapter one, you talked about your mom sending you to a seven-day Adventist school as a kid. Now, with that being a Christian school, what was it like to go to a Christian school as a Muslim girl, and how was the treatment and perception of who you were different?
Well, first, I love education as a child. So, you know, I really didn't know the difference, like religion-wise. Like, I don't know, maybe I was just different than everybody else. I didn't know Christianity, Islam, whatever. But upon going to school, I did experience discrimination based off of my belief. Of course, my name was a hint. Before I got married, my name was Rashida Akbar Bracelet. So I had two last names. Both of my first and my maiden name is an Arabic name. So people probably already knew, like, okay, what is this girl doing here? It was different because I was taught different practices at home for, like, Islam, like praying five times a day. You know, we face the east to pray to God. And then when you go, well, when I was going to the Seventh-day Adventist school, it was totally different. They go to church on Saturday. They didn't eat meat. They talked a lot about Bible scripture. I had to learn a lot about Bible scripture in the morning. We had worship in the morning. So I was already kind of lost because those kids have been learning about Christianity since birth, I guess. And then I had this one, I guess she was a teacher assistant, and she was really mean to me all the time. And she told me that a child could not have two last names. They're supposed to only have their father's last name. So I just kind of, I changed it so that the lady would leave me alone. And so then, you know, back then it was old school. They send our work home in the folders at home to have your parents sign off of, you know. So my mom looking through my work, she was like, why is your name, where's the other part of your name? Like, and then I had to tell her. I didn't want to tell her, but my mom went up to that school and she went off on that lady, and we didn't have any problems as far as my name after that. But my mom was not playing those types of games, but that was like the first instance I kind of realized I was getting treated differently. She didn't tell nobody else that. And there were other kids that had two last names too, you know? So it was confusing, I'll say that. Cause I'm learning one thing at home, but at school I'm learning something else. So, you know, then they start talking about heaven and hell, and I'm like, okay, am I going to heaven or hell? I don't, you know, I was really confused.
That's a lot. So what that kind of makes me wonder too is, if you were going through one thing in school, what was the pressure like at home? Were you getting a different type of energy from your mom when you were going home, when you were bringing home those Christian practices? You know, how did that go?
Funny thing is, I really didn't talk about the Christian aspect of school. It's just like I learned my ABC today, 1, 2, 3. I really didn't talk about the scripture part, I guess. It didn't dawn on me, like, I was 6, 7. Like, I didn't know. I'm like, okay, I pray at home, so we praying at school. But they're talking about Jesus, and we talk about Jesus too, but not in the same aspect. So, you know, as a kid, I'm just like, okay, I'm doing a get along to go along with the rest of my peers. So I never really brought the religion part home to my mom or anything like that.
That's a good choice. Okay. Now I'm serious. I know for me, if I came home and I said anything out of pocket to my mom about anything, it could be religion. I could tell my mom. So my mom was one of them folks, like, when you come home, you immediately eat the table and you start studying. Man, if she said, what's 2 plus 2? And I said 5, there was a whole. And matter of fact, TT, I know you out there. You met my mom, Joanne, before. You know Joanne pulls up in a heartbeat. So all jokes aside, I understand the energy, and I think it's amazing that you displayed the resilience throughout school to get you where you are today, creator, writing content, and leading people to a different perception of spirituality and education in a long time. That's great. My next question I have for you. So in another chapter of your book, you made it clear you are a sports enthusiast. So what type of sports do you like? Do you like to play?
I like, back then, even now, even though I don't do it as much, I like to play everything. I play football, I play basketball, softball, I ran, I did everything. Like, I was a tomboy back then, and kind of, you know, I kind of still am now, but I wanted to play with the boys. I ain't trying to hear all that jump rope stuff. Like, your girl is out there playing with the boys, okay? So, even now, I like sports. You know, my husband is a basketball coach too, so.
Hey,
yeah. So I just love sports, you know. I love, and then because how I grew up, my cousin, like he was a boy, and you know, he always used to say, girls can't do what boys do, and I'm like, yes, we can. So my mom was kind of like that too, like. She was into sports. She ran track. Like, I come from an athletic family, so.
Hey, look, I understand. Look, I know what's going on up here right now. That got hands. Anyway, staying focused then on the topic of sports. So while you were going to that Sunday event in school, this was in middle school, I believe.
Yeah.
Playing a lot of sports with the boys. In your book, you spoke about a pastor Long, and you extend your knee while playing. Instead of him focusing on the injury that you sustained, he focused more on telling you that girls shouldn't be playing boys' sports. So I could tell that kind of fired you up and cleaned you up a bit. So how did that make you feel at the time, one, about being at a Christian school and them not seeing equality in males and females, and how did it make you feel about the Christian faith as a whole, with everyone supposed to be equal in the eyes of God?
So when he first addressed that to me, I felt like maybe it was something wrong with me, or maybe, I don't know, maybe I wasn't supposed to be doing that because I was a girl. And then being that it was I don't know if it was like a religious thing, kind of, sort of, maybe it could have been, but maybe they just didn't think girls should be interacting with boys at that age. But I was definitely hurt, and I promise you, I never forgot that till this day. Like, a lot of people make those types of comments where girls are not supposed to be doing what boys are doing. My mom never raised me like that. My dad has never said nothing to me about, oh, I can't play with the boys or do boys' sports. But I was definitely hurt. I felt the type of way. I'm not sure why the pastor would embarrass me in front of my peers like that. You know, he told me that I could no longer play. And if I played with him, like with the boys, that I would be in timeout during recess. So I had to start playing with my female classmates. Well, only when he was not there. But I still was playing sports with the boys. But that did, it hurt me. It left a lasting impression on me for sure.
That's crazy. You know what? I bet he's mad because he's saying it. So while we're talking on this subject, hey, over here in the comment box, if you think that men and women can play sports equally, same level, higher level, wherever you think at, if you think we're all on the same page, please drop a heart over there in the comment section. If I personally believe we're all the same, like I told you, I know some females that got some hands. I know females that can dribble. Look, I got my ankles broken in high school by a girl, and that cost me getting on the high school basketball team. Coach saw me get crossed up, and no lie, in the gym during PE, mind my own business, he come in and sit down. I go see him in the afternoon, and he was like, nah, I was in the gym. And next thing you know, I was in the cooking class. But anyway, now a point. So moving on to my next question for you, sis. So hey, I'm gonna tell you right now, if you are a person who gets sensitive by language, now might be the time to jump off if you're about to say something. Really. So my question for you, even though you were surrounded by the Christian faith throughout elementary all the way to high school, I know that didn't stop people from judging you based on the color of your skin. And after the 9/11 situation happened, there were a lot of people that were looking at any Muslim and they considered him as a threat or as a liability to the country. And there was a time in school when he had been called nigger. There was a time when you were called a sand nigger in school solely because of complexion of your skin in conjunction with your religious background. So my question for you, one, is how did that make you feel? And two, what brought you through those challenges to be resilient, to continue to progress, and to elevate your life where it is?
It was really hurtful. It's one thing to be called the N-word, period, but to be called a sand nigger is something totally different because I didn't know what it meant until I went home and asked my mom. Basically, a sand nigger is somebody who is Muslim and they're black. That's a hate term that they use. That's what they call you or try to make jokes like you're from the Middle East or something like that. And that hurt my feelings too. I was always on the edge after 9/11 happened because, you know, in school, they started to watch those videos more. And like I said, you know, people knew based off of my last name that I was not Christian. So that kind of made me a target. I was nervous. I love history class, but I didn't like it when it came around to September for obvious reasons. I was scared at some point because I used to get bullied a lot because of that, you know, because of my religion. And honestly, if it wasn't for my mom and a small group of friends that I had to see me beyond my religion, I might not have made it. Like, it was days that I did come home crying from school because of that. Like, I didn't know what to do. And I couldn't understand why people couldn't see me for who I was, not because of my religious beliefs. Like, that does not make me as a person as a whole. I still was playing sports. I was an A student. I didn't get in trouble. I was a good friend, a good daughter. Like, I can't understand that. That scarred me. I'm not going to lie to you. At some point, it started to click on me that I started to become embarrassed of my religion because of the social experiences I had. So I wasn't as comfortable with telling people that I was a Muslim. I really just stopped talking about religion altogether. I really just didn't say anything. You know, I had someone ask me, why did my uncle blow up the World Trade Center? I'm like, I'm from Florida, Jacksonville. My uncle, I'm not even related to dude. I don't even know him. Like, so it was hard. It was really tough. I was worried. I was always on a higher level. You know, we're stressed in high school, but I had an extra level added to that because of my religious background.
What's crazy is that we still live in a society that people have gotten popular to say whatever it is they want to say because you're backed by the person who is great. You know, cool, you got that amendment. So, at the end of the day, we try our best to stay away from using these, but I think it's very, very important, like you said, that you have people around you that sustain you mentally, keep you confident, prevent you from going out of the way that can stop you from getting to. Because eventually, like in your case, yoga led you to further education, led you into the school system where you're now making a lot of positive impact on lives on the daily basis. It's awesome that you have a team around you that can keep you so where you want to be next. Definitely. So
thanks, bro.
So so speaking of school, this perfectly segues into the next question. So your first time away from school. So real quick, before I even ask this question, hey, if any of you graduated from an HBCU, those in the back that don't know what that is a black college or university, I need you to stand up right now, get in this comment box, and tell me which HBCU you graduated from. This one right here, this one graduated from Fayetteville State University, Fayetteville, North Carolina, what's good. But if you graduated from HBCU, please drop it in the box. We're going to continue the discussion. So in the discussion, this discussion, see, I'm over here talking in front of an educated terrorist. But in the meantime, this, I know you you graduated from the, as you put it, the illustrious, the amazing, the astounding, the phenomenal Bethune University. And that was your first time away from your parents. So you really had a chance to branch out and to become you for the first time with no one to your left and right kind of pushing you. So your first time away was at Bethune. And I want to know, what was the change of atmosphere coming from your educational upbringing? You came from a Christian school, you were a Muslim based on your religious preference, and now you're coming to a school where you're surrounded by people who are six, Muslim, Jewish, for those that decide to still come to it about that way. And then you have people like me, who are heathens running around campus. I told you I was going to say it. But with you being around all these different types of people, what was that like for you going to a
So, a little history fact, Bethune-Cookman is associated with the United Methodist Church. So, I was still around a religious institution. However, when I got to college, I guess I was a little kind of more lax than I was in high school, because like you said, there are a lot of different backgrounds. However, religion still came up and Christianity was still that dominant, like, religion. You know, we still had to go to chapel on Wednesday. HBCU, every Wednesday, you in the chapel listening to somebody, okay? I really started to... at that point, being away from home and not practicing my usual Islamic faith and being exposed to going to chapel and stuff, I really start to question and ask myself, you know, is there a God, or am I in the right religion, or why am I Muslim? I started to ask myself questions, and then at one point, I just stopped being spiritual, religious altogether. I just decided to myself that, you know, I'm just probably a lost soul at this point in some sense, you know. And then things happen in school that kind of be like, okay, I know I need God in my life, so maybe I could try the religious part again, but I just didn't know what religious affiliation I wanted to be. So I was just confused. I was learning, but I was still confused at the same time. However, I did have, like I said, having that support of people that's not judging you based off of what religious affiliation you are, that helps extremely a lot. You know, people never sat down and taught me about Christianity. You know, the ones that I had encountered were just very kind of like judgmental. You know, I had people telling me I'm gonna go to hell because I'm not a Christian. But I'm like, okay, but I didn't get to choose my religion, so why would God, you know what I'm saying? Why would God send me to hell? I didn't choose it. You know, we don't have that choice. You know, our parents make that, you know, that decision, and then as we get older, we have that freedom to decide if we're gonna stay in that box, you know. But I really think people should not per se, what is it, indulge in it, but at least tell your kids about different religious beliefs so they won't be ignorant to everything, you know? I didn't know what Christianity was. Even going to a Christian school for all those years, I still didn't know.
So I got to ask you this. Did your religious background stop you from being able to participate in different things? Parties being around? Did any of that kind of, did it kind of prove you from, Jesus doesn't want me to go, but I just heard somebody say for the 99 in 2000, like, did any of that stop you from still getting that far?
No, I became a rebel. I did the total opposite. You know, I got tattoos. I did what got my ears pierced. I was at those parties. You know, I did what I wanted to do, you know. And then you got to remember, too, like, I'm an Americanized, I was Americanized Muslim then. Like, I wasn't like how some of them are fully dressed and clothed. I grew up in the United States, African American. And then people need to know that there are two different types of Muslims. You know, you have the Nation of Islam, which is African American based. You know, Muhammad, you know, Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, things like, you know, like that. That's more so what I grew up being as Black Power, like we're for our people, Black support, all of that. So nah, I was out there for the 99. I was out there. It didn't stop me from going. It did not stop me from going, bro. It did not.
You said I was out there for the, hey, I need to make that tag in this video. I was out there for the, no. I think that's dope though. So, but sticking to that subject of school. So while you were attending, not only was the transition from one education system to a universal education system, even though it had a Methodist background, but the education itself was a challenge at times for you and a lot of people. But you are a person that constantly persevered, you worked hard, and you got the grades. And if I'm right, you graduated.
That is correct, sir. I did do that.
what it makes me want to go into, in one of the chapters of your book, I ain't gonna tell y'all which one. You wanna know which chapter? So while you were there, you worked hard in your education. Can you tell the viewers about a situation that happened with one of your teachers and they tried to accuse you of plagiarism? I know this wasn't necessarily at this was when you went into grad school. Can you tell us about
what happened? Okay, I just want to make this clear that the grad school was a PWI. So it's my first time in grad school. Of course, it's like maybe three other Black people in the program. And I was, maybe four credits of being done with that program, maybe? I had this white female professor, and she accused me of plagiarism, and then her husband was also the department chair. So she accused me of plagiarism. She didn't even try to explain to me about how to write this paper or anything. Like, she didn't tell me what I did wrong. She just flat out sent it to her husband, who's the department chair, to try to get me kicked out of school. And so I'm like, well, damn, you know. In undergrad, the professor be like, hey, Rashida, this is what you did wrong moving forward. She didn't try to do that. So I had to go before a hearing and explain myself. And, you know, her husband was more gracious and he kind of understood, you know. And so I tried to reach out to her multiple times to ask her, you know, and all she would tell me was, you're a graduate level student and you should know how to write. That's all she said, you know. So I was like, okay. So I tried to write my second paper again, and then she accused me of plagiarism again. And this time they were like, okay, well, we're just gonna put you on academic suspension or whatever, and you can't come back for a period of time. Now, that whole instance scarred me for a really long time because it had me believing that I could not write to their standard of writing. Like, I felt like, okay, they picking on me and, you know, made me feel like I was dumb. But I knew I wasn't dumb because I made it like 75% through the program. But even in grad school now, it's a PWI too, but I have a 3.86. I don't have a problem with APA. The professors at that school actually took time out to help me figure out what It's wrong, my paper. Of course, my LS, who has a doctoral degree, I make sure she proofs my papers to, you know, make sure, but they tried to destroy your girl. Like, you know, make me feel like I was incompetent or wasn't good enough. And it probably because, well, I was one of the three Black people that was in that program. You know, I also want to say this. Sometimes these people, the females, they feel like they have to prove themselves to their counterparts, and they be hard as hell on you as a student. No lie.
Well, I would say you'd be happy, but I think that's very true. I think we live in a time where we are a Black person, and we are trying to pursue higher heights. There's always going to be someone who sees it as a threat. And it's almost like knowing that there's a seed in the ground, and knowing the seed is going to grow into a gigantic tree, and you don't want that tree blocking your view. So the best thing that you can do is try your best to get that seed out of the ground before it grows into a tree that blocks your view. I feel like it's almost irony, because for someone who can't write per se, this book is pretty good. You say that again for folks in the back. For someone who so-called cannot write, this book looks pretty good to me right now. With that being said, you have done so much in so little time, so much more room to grow. I think it's time to get into the biggest topic that we don't really focus on, and that's specifically the conversion. So in chapter, I'm going to give y'all, this is one time I'm going to give you something. The rest of these chapters, y'all have to think about it. Now, chapter 10 of your book, in chapter 10, there's a quote in there from Dalai Lama where he basically says that conversion is not my intent. Changing religion is not easy. You may find some kind of confusion or difficulty. You specifically put this quote in your book, and I'm a believer, as someone who's also published a book, that we don't say things in our lives unless it really has a meaning or purpose to it. So why did you pick that phrase in particular, and what does that mean to you? I'm going to say it one more time for the listener, just so they understand the context. So again, the quote from chapter 10 is, conversion is not my intention. Changing religion is not easy. You may develop some kind of control. What did that phrase mean to you?
So I picked that quote because I would have never imagined in a million years that I would have converted to Christianity, especially with everything that I went throughout my life. I guess, I don't know if this is my expectation or society's expectation, like once you're a part of a certain religion, you have to stay there. And I just felt that quote meant that's not always the case. You have to have some sort of spiritual fulfillment. And this is not to bash Islam or anything, because I love my people, but that was not fulfilling me anymore. And when I got invited to a particular church, I felt like my connection was rebuilding with God. I went to a non-denominational affiliated Christian church where it was Blacks, whites, whatever. Like, they were just different off the rip. Like, it wasn't your typical Baptist, Methodist church or anything like that. They actually talked about social issues, what's going on. They talked about religion. They took time out to teach me classes before I decided to get baptized. They taught me stuff. They took the time out to say, oh, okay, you know, we do know about Islam. We do projects with them in the community. So this opened my mind up and said, okay, so everybody is not the same. All Christians are not the same, you know? And that quote just stood out to me. Like, religion is hard. Let's just be honest. A lot of people don't go to church. A lot of people don't go to the mosque or whatever for a lot of reasons. It's not an easy thing. And you deal with that daily. Sometimes you're like, God, why are you doing this to me? You know, I ain't gonna lie. You lose faith at some point. I did. I thought I was bad. I said, all right, I ain't gonna believe in God no more. You know? So that quote just stood out to me because it resonates with my life. Like, that's what I went, everything he said, that's exactly what I went through. I didn't expect to convert to Christianity, nor did I think that was something that I would do. But I did, because it feeds me spiritually. Not because, oh, being Christian is the right thing to do. That is what feeds me spiritually. That is how I talk to God. Not to say, you know, we can't go to church anymore. But, you know, it opened up something inside me that I never had before. Comfort. A sense of belonging, you know. I never had that before, you know, with Islam. And, you know, I even put a question in there, too, to say that maybe if I had been going to a more, you know, an Islam school or something, maybe the outcome would have been different. I don't know. But that was not my journey that God had for me. Maybe he wanted me to experience everything to, you know, inform other people.
Better to believe in something than to believe in at all. In your case, you dramatically saw the death that you were to dramatically. You went after what you wanted to. There's no shame in that. There's nothing negative about it. You did what was right for you, and it's going to take you on the right path to seeking God, seeking his face. For anyone out there that's listening, I want to do this out there too. If you are an individual that is in a religion, I feel like that religion is touching you directly, you're not in God's presence in steps in your actions. I'm not telling you that you need to reconsider and try it out to life. Religion isn't my child. You don't want to show and say, no, I'm going to pray. Sergeant, you have to honestly look at yourself and see what is it that I'm looking for, and God may lead you in a direction that takes you closer to Him. And anything that holds you closer to God has to be closer to the desires of your hands. So let's take it out. See, I'll take it back to what I said. This is my last question for you. In your book, I'm not going to say word. So, in your book, there's a section where you put in 21 questions. And all 21 of these questions relate to various topics throughout the book, of education, of conversion, how we treat people with different religions. It's interesting because in most books, when you put questions in, it's along the way as you read, like you get to the end of the chapter and questions. It seems like you wanted us to read the entire book. And now that you've read it, reflect on these topics by yourself, your friends, whatever the case may be. So, tell me, what made you create that list of questions to get to the reader? And is there a reason why you chose to put that in?
Yeah, I think that book of, well, I chose those questions so I could make people kind of think to help them be better human beings. And what you never know anybody's story, and I'm pretty sure I'm not the only person that's ever felt confused with religion or been in any bad situation. So it was just, you know, after you read the book, like, how did you feel before you read it, and how do you feel now that you read everything and you know more, you know more about religion? You know more about how somebody could possibly feel. You know more. It gives you a different hindsight. Like, I've told people this all the time. How can you be mad at somebody about the religious choice they chose when your parents make that choice for you? You don't make that choice at 5 and say, hey, I'm going to be a Christian. You probably don't even know what it is. You know, you don't know what that is. So how does that change your perspective at that point? Now that you know we don't make that choice. How do you know that's the right choice for you? We didn't get to pick it. Like, you know, and I'm not bashing nobody's parents or religious affiliation, but as we grow, things change, your perspective changes, your mind changes. So those questions was to help be a part of growth, to help something maybe change within themselves. Maybe now they have a better understanding of people who are of different religious backgrounds, or now you can educate somebody else, you know. Or instead, if you want somebody to be a part of your religion, maybe sit down and have a conversation with them about it. Not start off by saying, hey, you know, you're not in the right faith. Don't do that. You know, so it just helps you to learn how to maybe approach things differently. Look at it from the other side. Look at it from the other person's side, you know, to help them. We're supposed to help each other. That's what we're here for, right? You know, help each other through this process of life until we get to the next part. So that's what I kind of wanted to do by adding those questions in there.
I think that's great. I'll tell you, once you get a chance, after you teach your lesson, some of those questions will really make you think, am I doing things the right way? Am I actively working in my sense of it. Am I doing the right thing and talking to people? Am I even in the right religion itself? And they're not like questions that are really hard and push you to like dig deep, and it becomes almost like a task. These are basic questions that when you do them, you start pondering, and as you start going through the questions, you start saying, maybe I should have articulate this different to this person. Maybe the way that I'm not here fighting to bring souls to God isn't the right method. So there's a lot, there's so much content in here. And fun fact, we talked about a lot of good things in Ashita's book. I haven't even touched the service with some of the stuff that's in there. There's some other good stories, and I mean some good stories. Like, remember I told y'all to get tea before y'all left? Like, stories that you're gonna have like 2-3 cups on standby. Just to give you the entire book, I promise. But ladies and gentlemen, I'm just so thankful that we were able to have Rashida on today. Rashida, thank you so much for getting here with us. Real quick, can you put your, we're gonna put this down in the box, by the way. However, you can sell it on social media again so they can find you.
Yeah, my Facebook page is Author Rashida Jackson, and then my Instagram is Author Rashida Jackson 22, and then I can't remember my Twitter, but I'll put it in the group box so everybody can follow me.
Please make sure you do. I'm telling you, a lot of good content here, a lot more great content on the way. One last question. So how far are you from selling?
Say that one more time.
Okay, my question was, how far are we from getting the next book?
Well, I'm actually working on a few things now. I'll just give you a little insight. I'm working on a mental health book for African-American women, somewhere along the lines of, sis, you don't always have to be strong. There are not a lot of mental health books out there for African-American women to read or utilize once you're in therapy. I suggest therapy is always good. You know, it's more of us breaking into the field now. So this is just going to share stories of different types of Black women that we all go through a lot of the things. My chapter is called The Invisible Black Woman. So, you know, I'm going to tell how I feel in society or how society feels me, you know, what I've been through. I got a chapter in there called The Strong Black Woman, The Wise Black Woman, The Single Mother. It's a lot of things in that book that's going to help. Like, we have different things that teaches mindfulness in there, or coping strategies. If you know, if you don't want to go to counseling, that book is definitely going to be for you. So yeah, I'm trying to have it come out this year. Let's just say that.
Y'all heard it here now. So in the meantime, while we're waiting for that next book to come out, remember, from Pillars to Commandments, My Journey to Greatness, version by Miss Rashida Jackson. It's out right now. You can go on Amazon, get yourself a copy, and make sure to put it down in the description. But, ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we have for today. Again, my name is Kim Fitz. Rashida, thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you. Thank you, everybody.
In the meantime, y'all, move your dreams, move the world. You will be posting this on YouTube. I will talk to you soon. Take care.